For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the only podcast that turned off last night's Columbus game. I mean, they were up 5-0. It was a laugher. No sense watching the third period. It's time to do a little stargazing. Mark, how are you?
Well, I didn't give up 5 goals and then come back and win in overtime. How's that?
First team in NHL history, 1917 this stupid league was founded. First team in NHL history to blow a 5-goal lead in the third period and win the game.
But who comes back? And not only that, what was it? 2 goals in the final 2 minutes or something like that? It was 5-3 going into to the very end. But if you're going to do that, win the game.
Right? Send extra guys over the board at some point to just stop the bleeding. Do literally anything. Throw a stick.
I mean, as a golfer, this is the equivalent of hitting a 60-yard bunker shot to 2 inches and then missing the putt. I mean, it's ridiculous.
And then winning the playoff. I guess we're taking from we're approaching this from different teams. Yes, you are correct.
Yes. Well, let's put on our happy faces, because if you're a coach in the Central and you have a mean face, you got fired in the last couple of weeks.
So I mean,
I need my job.
Yeesh. And it's the Central. We'll start there because I think we have seen an interesting situation has developed. Atop, we're starting to see some separation. St. Louis, of course, on a miserable run, fired Craig Berube, not having the season they want. Arizona's been frisky, but they're fading a little bit in terms of a contender. The Minnesota Wild are just, you know, who could really use an extra $14 million in cap space, and Chicago is rebuilding. So that sort of left us with a 3-horse race at the top of the division. Right now, if you just look at the standings, it's Colorado, Peg, and then Dallas in third. Little bit deceiving. Colorado's played 2 more games than Dallas with a 3-point cushion. Winnipeg has played 1 more game than Dallas with a 1-point cushion. So if you want to be a nerd and look at points percentage, Dallas is technically in second with 64.8% of available points. Colorado is 65.5. So it's a mess. And the funny thing to me about this, Mark, is these are 3 very good teams. You know, Hellebuck is doing his thing. Colorado's got Makar and McKinnon, and just, you know, they can be a wagon at times. The teams over the last 10, though, it's kind of turned into a turtle derby. Dallas is 4-4-2. Peg is 6-4-0. Colorado is 5-3-2. So they're 3 good teams that don't seem to want to separate much. But what do you make of the Central right now?
Well, Colorado, I think, is still the best team. And I call them the Mountain Stars just because I go and check all my X-Star stats, and Colorado takes a while because they're, you know, you got Val, you got Cogs. I have to see every once in a while Tough Deal get called up. You got Kivi up there. It's like a whole reunion of Dallas Stars. And then Winnipeg, you got the ex-coach. So it's really stars all around. And it's no wonder they're all tied together.
I mean, I just have to circle back. I'm sorry. What would you give to have a Rick Bonus team go through the 5-goal third period blown lead, win it in overtime spectrum of emotions? Like, how much would you want to just watch him be behind the bench for that?
The only improvement would be that you would have Radek Fox to score a shootout goal to win it.
he'd start overtime, win the faceoff, and just go end to end, call game.
do the butt slide around the bench and just go high shelf. Yeah, I love it.
But you know, it's an interesting. So looking at the teams, right? They're all, you know, we talked about Winnipeg. There is a remarkable similarity, right? So Colorado is 18-9-2, Winnipeg is 17-9-2, Dallas is 16-8-3, right? So very similar win-loss totals. Colorado has 105 goals for, Winnipeg has 91, Dallas has 95. Colorado has 88 goals against, Winnipeg has 74, Dallas is 84, plus 17, plus 17, plus 11, right? These teams are just samey as all get out, and it's I don't know.
Well, what we have is something that we haven't seen in a long time, which is the Central is not really the interesting conference in the West. The
Pacific. No, that's
you got Vegas over there. You got the Kings who are still kind of flying under the radar, and now since they lost their coach, the Edmonton Oilers are putting together a nice little stretch. We have real Connor McDavid playing.
I mean, it's funny how regression happens, but and to your point, right? Vegas, Vancouver, and Los Angeles would all be leading the Central Division were they in it right now. Sorry, take it back. Los Angeles would not, but I was looking at points percentage. They wouldn't, but they've got three games in hand and are 2 points behind Colorado. So yeah, it's that one's kind of turned into a wagon.
It's entirely possible. You may see five teams coming out of the Pacific, and when was the last time that happened?
Right. And the other bit is like, this may not be the year, thanks to their stumbles out of the gate, this may not be the year that you want to win the Central Division, because that could mean a matchup against the likes of how much of a kick in the teeth would it be to scrap and claw and fight all season, win the Central and have a first round matchup with Edmonton, who has had to just blister down the stretch to make the playoffs.
You know, the only upside is that you get to watch McDavid and Miro. So, yeah, but it's not one that you really look forward to as a first round matchup.
No, I guess the only positive is you just hope everybody's healthy, and I guess better chances of that early. So, yeah, it's the West is turning out to be interesting. And you know, the perpetually will they get healthy Colorado Avalanche. You know, Winnipeg seems like one of those classic Rick Bonus teams losing Connor for an extended period of time. It's going to hurt their offense, but if there's any coach that seems to know how to lean on an elite goaltender and eke out results, right, Winnipeg has him. And then you've got the Stars, and they had their first two game, you know, they had their first multiple losses in a row stretch this past week, you know, got back to their winning ways last time out. What is your kind of general temperature check of the team right now?
I mean, I think everything that you look at has to focus on the defense and the goal, because offense is, I hate to say, just kind of clicking, but three lines are contributing offensively. Mm-hmm. The fourth line is kind of doing what you expect them to do. You're rolling all four lines. It's not like there's anybody out there getting, you know, single digit minutes on the ice every time they go out there. We're playing Pete DeBoer hockey. We're getting the puck in the net. It's just that, you know, as a Dallas Stars fan, you're kind of used to at this point being able to hold a lead and or shut somebody down. And between the way the defense is giving up odd man rushes and cycle plays, and then Jake Oettinger being a bit more leaky than we came to expect at the early part of the season, it's tough. You can't really hold a lead, and so you can't get comfortable.
Yeah, and on that note, we're gonna play a little quiz game. So if you look at, and going by Money Puck, just sourcing myself, where does Jake Oettinger rank in terms of goals saved above what is expected?
I mean, he's right around break even, I think. So not great, especially if you're talking about somebody who's a true 1A.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. He's 45th in the league between Freddie Anderson and Devin Levi. Mackenzie Blackwood's in the blender with him, Darcy Kemper, Cal Peterson, James Reimer. These are not, let's just say that's not his typical peer group. And
yeah, I mean, he's behind Wedgwood, isn't he?
He's actually now ahead of Wedgwood. He was okay. Behind Wedgwood at the start of December. He's been a little bit better lately. Wedgwood is at -1.6. Otter is at -0.1, right? So we talked, you know, early this, you know, a lot of the path to success for Dallas when we were prognosticating the season was, well, they'll have the offense and they'll have the goaltending. And as of today, right now, they really don't have the goaltending. They got it early. Jake's cooled off big time late. I think Wedgwood has had some moments, right? And he certainly battled his way to some of the results the team needed, but he's not been lights out in the pipe either. They're both sitting at, what, 904 for save percentage for Ottinger, 905 for Wedgwood, 2.85 goals against for Jake, 3.25 for Wedgwood. One thing I will say positive for Wedgwood is dude is 5-1. Yeah. So the team at least is outscoring, his troubles and travails. So yeah, it's not been great.
Well, it's been average. And I mean, I kind of view the 900 line as the Mendoza line for goaltenders. If you're under there, then you have to scratch your head a little bit. And so 904, 905, not ideal. You want to see that in the 915 to 920 range, maybe for an elite goaltender, but not deadly. And Ottinger's been off, and he has traditionally, I think, during the regular season had stretches where he wasn't making the saves that you expect him to make.
And to be very clear, right, this is, unless you're talking peak Vasilevsky, right, this is every goaltender. In the current NHL, right? So this is, it's not something, yeah, and you're right. For his career, he's a 915 save percentage kid, 248 goals against average. So he is, it's there. He's going through a rough one right now. And how much of that, we talked about this a little bit last week, right? In your opinion, how much of that do you see as something that's maybe, in the past he has been a little bit aggressive with his movement and can give up some angles from time to time? How much of this is Jake driven versus how much of this is we've talked about the quality of chances against, right? And the quality of what he's been facing. How much of that is the team in front of him, or can you parse the two apart?
Well, I don't think you can parse them apart. It's defense. And I don't know if you saw this, but there was a little shot from the team practice yesterday on Twitter. And it apparently Pete DeBoer was not happy with the way the Stars defense has been protecting the crease, stick positions, various things like that. And so the team is working on that. And that's exactly what you're going to find is if Ottinger's being real aggressive and getting outside the crease, trying to shut down shots, if you don't have any kind of rebound control or control of opponent's sticks, they're going to get those rebounds and they're going to find a wide open cage and they're going to put it right in. And we've seen a bit of that happening.
Yeah, I think I think it's also, this is one of those where coaches will tell you what they're thinking about, right? And when you look at DeBoer's comments and when you look at ice time and who's getting starts and all of that, one of the things that stands out to me is we have not seen, if this was a Jake Ottinger thing, then I think we would see a more even distribution or at least a change in some of the starts. And maybe you'd give Jake a couple of easier games, or maybe you'd give Wedgwood an extra spot start here or there. But the fact that, the fact that DeBoer has stayed with his, it seems to be, three games for Jake, one game for Wedge, right? Seems like he's stuck with that, which to your point tells me that he's much more looking at this as a team-wide thing versus, oh no, my goalie's broken, what do I do?
Well, and you go back to when DeBoer first got hired, one of the big screams was that DeBoer is going to come in and ruin Ottinger, and not really ruin his game from a technical point of view, but just mind games like happened in Vegas. And so opposed to that, what he's doing is kind of sticking to script, and Ottinger's getting his starts and Wedge was getting the leftovers, which is what you would have expected.
Now, let me ask you, do you think that's the right decision for Pete DeBoer to make? Let's do some backseat driving here, Mark.
Well, I don't see what the options are. If he's going to go up the chain and talk to Jim Neal, he's not going to talk about replacing Jake Ottinger. He's going to talk about bringing in somebody on the defense. And so I don't know that DeBoer has really any choice other than to keep playing Ottinger the way that the good Lord intended him to be played, which is as a 1A. Scott Wedgwood is not going to all of a sudden miraculously turn into a 1A or a 1B. He's your backup goaltender. He's doing a great job of it, but that's his role. And so Ottinger is in his role. You do what you need to get him back going. If that's a little coaching, if it's a little bit of working with the defense not to give up chances that Ottinger's been giving up goals on, that's what you do.
Yeah, and you're right. That's the right straight. You've got a guy with a track record in Jake Ottinger that says he's going to be fine. And you've got a guy with a track record that says he is a backup goaltender, and you're not seeing gaffes, right? You're not seeing, beach ball wristers from the blue line finding their way in, right? It's coverage stuff. It's in tight. It's quick plays. They're just giving up a lot of them. So yeah, I think you're right. It's not a non-issue because it needs to get fixed. And you know, this team isn't going to, you're not going to go far, whether the Stars or any other team, right? But you're not going to go far with a, you know, negative or even goals saved above average, right? But Ottinger's been on heaters before. He'll be on heaters again. I just don't think that right now it's more something you put in the it's interesting column, but I don't think you act on it quite yet. The defense is a whole different beast. And, you know, topic du jour, topic of the month, it feels like, season even. You know, Lundqvist had his first benching of the season, got back in the lineup, benched again. It's a mess back there, right?
Yeah, and there's been a lot that's come out here the last week, and it's almost like everything that you read on Nils Lundqvist is that the team's given up on him. And whether that's true or not, I don't know. Certainly, they have found some things that he needs to work on, and those things are things that he's going to work on in practice as opposed to working it out on the ice. So that's potentially a problem. You know, if the team has actually given up on him, I think there are some interesting things that you can do out there. You know, I don't know if I mentioned this last time, but Edmonton's having a similar issue with Philip Broberg. He was recently sent down to Bakersfield as a number eight overall pick from a couple drafts ago. Left-hand D, bigger guy, can skate, not quite as offensively oriented as Lundqvist, but it's Edmonton, it's Ken Holland, it's a good buddy of Jim Neal. So if they want to go just do a little swap and say, I can't get what I need out of this guy, you can't get what you need out of that guy, let's flop him over and see if we can change of scenery will help. Yeah. That's certainly something that you can put on the table. But right now, Lundqvist cost the team a first round draft choice. And if you're not going to play him, you're not going to get anything out of him. And he's good enough so that if you try and send him down to the Texas Stars to work on anything, he's going to get claimed on waivers. So
yep.
It's lose-lose.
Yeah, just it's I'm having flashbacks to the you know, the Gurianov and you know, Valeri Nichushkin and even, heaven help us, Julius Honka as well. I'm an optimist by nature. I just feel like, I don't know. I rankle sometimes. The adage is always, well, the NHL isn't a developmental league. And I actually think that's kind of BS because of the cap, frankly. And I think that when you're a team like the Dallas Stars that is capped out, and when you have a glaring position of need, which is, you know, the defense, it frustrates me that I just feel like more of an effort needs to be made here. And I know that there's a whole culture around, you don't want to give unearned ice time and you can't afford mistakes and yada, yada, yada. But for a team with Dallas's ambitions and Dallas's limitations, I just, it frustrates me. But again, I'm not in practice. You know, I'm not seeing things behind the bench. I have a different perspective. But just looking at what this roster is, it frustrates. I do potentially think the team should be doing more, even if it's a little bit of coddling, even if it's kind of force feeding, even if it's accepting some mistakes, right? It's not like this team is a playoff bubble team. I just keep coming back to they have $500,000 in cap space and absolutely nobody behind them in the pipeline, right? And so sure, if you can pull a swap for somebody else's misfit toy, great. But at the same time, like, this is the roster that you have. These are the options that you have available. And I just don't think it's leaning on Joel Hanley. I don't believe that that's the correct course for this team.
Well, I'll back up a little bit and say, you're talking about a problem of December that I think you don't need to solve until March. And we saw this last year with Domi and Dodonov and what Neil was able to do, bringing in some decent talent at the trade deadline. and do that because you can rack up enough cap space in order to bring in a higher level contract because you've gone through a majority of the season at that point. And so my general theory is that, you know, I don't know that you're really talking about the Stars being in danger of not making the playoffs.
No.
And so at that point, what you're really doing is saying, here's what I need to do in order to get myself to the playoffs. And if I need to improve come March, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the market, find myself some guy who's going to be a pending UFA who has some skills that I need, and I'm going to bring him in at a cost that I can get under the cap. And that's my playoff roster. And Neil worked it to perfection last year with Dadonov and Domi. And I think he liked that. And he's going to do the same thing this year with the defense.
Yeah. And I just, you know, it just feels like it feels like spinning wheels and wasting time. Right. So you're going to.
Well, it is because, yeah, you have Lundqvist sitting on the bench. You have Joel Hanley, who really shouldn't be playing until the playoffs when he plays all the time.
Yeah.
Playoff Hanley. Yeah. That's what he does. Anybody who scores their first goal in their career in the Stanley Cup Finals is a good guy.
That's right. It just feels, yeah. This is one of those, and again, I'm a big Nil Stan guy, right? I've got my Jim Nil replica mustache on the mantle. You know, I want to get it signed someday. So this is not to criticize the entire administration, but as much as we've seen success with the forward core and with the goaltending. I think this season we're seeing, you know, there may have been, and it may have just been the reality of what was available, right? But, you know, looking at, would you rather, and again, this is just wishing and hoping, but, you know, $1 million for Craig Smith, $850 for Sam Steele, you know, $2.2 for Evgeny Dadonov. If one of those guys was a depth defenseman, things might be a little bit easier to weather.
Yeah, I think... The problem was that you saw seven defenders who were on NHL contracts and you really had to go out of your way to make a deal to get rid of one of them. And I think the early on thought was, well, there's a spot there because Hanley is that was a UFA signing. We got him for two more years. So that was a potential slot. But I don't know that you can hate the Hanley signing. He's kind of the ideal seventh defender.
Yeah.
The thing people hate is that you're playing your ideal seventh defender as your sixth defender.
Yeah. Well, and it's also, you've left yourself in this weird situation where you've got, you know, yeah, Hanley is the option, right? You're the ways that you fix this defense are a trade that you probably don't want to make and have to wait on. And the risks of, you know, yes, last season, Domi and Dadonov worked out great at the deadline, but that's not a given that you're, you know what I mean? So
yeah, it's a lightning in the bottle thing.
Yeah. And so what if that trade doesn't work? You know, how many free agent signings, you know, tell me about the Stanley Cup Jerome Iginla one with the Pittsburgh Penguins, right? It's, you know, doesn't always work. So you've left yourself in a situation where you have to roll the die in March, or you have to make a trade you don't want to make right now, or you're just shuffling chairs around. Right. And it feels none of this was a surprise, I guess, is the frustration.
Yeah. And I mean, you have positive surprise, and here where we're leaning a little heavy negative, I'll just say Thomas Harley,
which
should turn it all around. That's good stuff. So one of the two bets that we needed to hit at the beginning of the year actually hit. And that was Harley. He's been wonderful. Second best defender on the team right now. Lundqvist. Well, no, that didn't really hit. And apparently the team has seen enough so that they have some major things that need to happen there before he's going to see a slot on the ice. And so that one didn't hit. And so now what do you do?
Yeah.
And the only thing I've been harping on is that it's not a problem you need to solve right now. And so show a little patience.
It isn't. You're right. And I guess my frustration isn't even around whether or not you need to solve it right now. Because you are correct, right? If you are the Stars, and if you have decided it's not him, because of the way that, and the reason the cap, just in case, right? The reason the cap stuff matters is salaries are prorated over the course of the season. So the guy that Dallas can sign today with their $950K in cap space, that changes dramatically as you get to the end of the season, right? By not signing him now, you only have to pay a portion of
a portion of that contract. So you can get an exponentially more expensive player if you're able to wait till March to make a move. So the 450, the 457 they've got today wouldn't get you much in December, but in March that could get you a pretty good player based on how the cap structure works. And of course there's no salary cap in the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. So the reason we're harping on the deadline, you don't have to do it now, is why, again, it just feels, I don't know. Like I said, if you know it's not him, start figuring it out, right? Because it's it's the one thing, you know, you talked about Harley's playing well, you know, Miro is playing, you know, he's still Miro, but we can, you know, psychoanalyze as to why, but he really, it seems like more than in previous seasons, the weight of what's expected of Miro in terms of carrying a pair from his offside without a lot of help, right? It seems like that has been more of a problem than it has been traditionally. So you've hit your lottery ticket and you've got your number two defender in Thomas Harley, and that seems to be working out. Your number one is still your number one, but he's wobbling a little bit. You're not seeing what you necessarily would love to see out of, you know, I forget who, somebody had the line that Suter is probably playing better than you would like to admit that he's playing, but, you know, worse than the team probably needs him to play. So you just,
Suter, you know, 15 minute a game Suter, I think, is a better player than 20 minute a game Suter. And we started the year more with a 15, 16 minute a game Suter. Mm-hmm. And as the trust issues have come up, Suter's ice time has been eking back up to the 20 range. And, you know, as an older person, it takes its toll. And I think we're seeing that.
And it also, and this is where the playoffs come into, it takes its toll in terms of wear and tear. In my opinion, this is also the sort of thing that gets you killed in the playoffs, because the more that the more, and not, this isn't just a Ryan Suter thing, right? The more that a player has to play, the more opportunity your opponent has to exploit whatever weaknesses might exist, right? So if he's playing 20 plus minutes a night, there are a lot more opportunities. Again, thinking about that first round matchup against Edmonton, right? There are a lot more opportunities for a clever coach to double shift somebody and all of a sudden get McDavid out there at the same time as Ryan Suter, right? And you can engineer those situations a lot more when the team has, when Dallas has fewer options, because then it's moves and counter moves, right? If I know that you have to put a slow player on the ice, all, you know, a third of the game, then I can have many more opportunities to catch you. Whereas if you only have to put him out there for, you know, 15 minutes, or even in times of great need, dial it back even further, it's a lot easier for you to hide that guy from me and to you know, keep me guessing on matchups than when he has to play all the time.
Yeah. And to tell you the truth, I think Jim Nill's feeling a little vulnerable here, just because he made some efforts to have some reinforcements for the defense this year. And you know, Bixel going to Rugel, which seems to now in hindsight be an absolute miserable choice, because Rugel is, as soon as he gets out there, they lose their kind of you know, North American offensive coach and GM. So who knows what he's going to be playing with now that the Swedish team's going through their changes. And then really the guy who was probably your first call up from Texas is Gavin Bayreuther, and he's been out since game one. So all of a sudden you have a bare cupboard behind. And so the seven that you have in Dallas is kind of the seven that you roll with.
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows what happens? You know, we cross your fingers, knock on wood. This team has, over the last several years, been extremely healthy.
Yeah.
But there's a little vulnerability there as well, especially on the defensive end. You know, on the offensive end, some people might want a little motion on the in the forward groups, just so we can get a little look at Bork and Stankoven. Anyway, negativity abounds. What do we have to say that's positive as we wrap this?
Well, I was going to say, I actually had one more negative thing if I want to
talk. Oh, great. Okay, cool.
How many points does Wyatt Johnston have in his last 10 games?
Well, I don't think it's zero, so I'm going to go one.
It's four technically, but two of those came before Thanksgiving. So he has 2 points since Thanksgiving, a pair of assists. The last time he scored a goal, he had two against Calgary on November 24th. That's the last time he scored. And before that, it was November 12th. So he's been through it
a little bit.
He did have a resounding plunk off the pipe, didn't he?
I was going to ask, because like eye test wise, you know, his line has been, you know, we talked a little bit last week, I believe, about, you know, Dadonov has been more of a play drag so far this season. You know, DeBoer went to the blender. If you look at the totals, you know, Jamie Benn is still fifth on the team in scoring. So that line is still somewhat productive, though Benn went through a stretch of his own. But any concerns long term? Is this a glaring warning sign about Wyatt Johnston?
I don't think it's a warning sign about Johnston. I think it's a kind of a warning sign about the third line, which is, you know, if you talk about the top three lines that you're just going to roll through and all of them can be offensively dangerous, I think the one line that is going to be a little shot share negative and a little expected goal negative, at least the way it looks right now, is that Johnston, Benn, Dadonov line. And so they're the ones that kind of need to up their game to get on the same page as the top two lines. But yeah, you know, some of it is maybe they're defending a little more, figuring out Johnston's game. What do you have? You have a little uptick from Dadonov lately. So maybe the line is adjusting to how they're being played against. I think the line still works. Yeah, you have Dadonov who's a great F1. And then both Johnston and Benn are guys who can think their way around, put together passes, and shoot.
Yeah, and I think the other bit is with the Stars and with the DeBoer system, I think the other thing that you have to keep in mind, and this is a weird statement, I get it, but when you're thinking about how a line is playing, I think you have to look at the other two lines, right? It's all about context. And so part of evaluating that specific line is how well that specific line is playing. And we've had some slumps. They've struggled a little bit defensively. Dadonov got benched. You know, he had to watch a couple games or watch a game recently. So there's some stuff that tells you that it's not going exactly as the team would like it to go. But the first line is scoring again. You know, we've talked a lot about the Sagan, Duchesne, Marchment trio and how well they're playing. So to some degree, at least indirectly, you have to look at the third line and say, well, if nothing else, they're playing well enough to keep some of the heat off of the other two units. And maybe that's just, maybe we'll see over the course of the season, the various of the three lines, one it's going to go cold while the other two kind of heat up for a little bit. And maybe that's just maybe the pattern we're going to see with this team.
Well, and that's really the luxury that you have here. You know, as I go through and put together previews for all the games, it's so rare to find this team that you can say they can roll lines like the Stars can. And yeah, so the Johnston line might be quote unquote the semi-weak link, but other teams just have gaping holes in that, yes, in that same spot, or they, you know, they're rolling a third line out like the old you know, Cogliano Como Foxa line. It's their shutdown line, and you don't expect anything out of them on the other end of the ice,
or the Marchment, you know, Marchment Sagan Foxa. Right. Or right. Marchment Sagan insert concert, you know, contest winner from the stands. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Who brought their skates to the ring tonight? Sags needs a right winger.
What are the forward version of the E-Bug?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I've he's still getting looks. But I think, you know, it's something that we'll continue to keep an eye on. But he's struggled lately, and the team could sure use him to start putting the puck in the back of the net again.
Yeah, and you know, even beyond that, Sam Steele's had a little bit of a renaissance here the last couple of games. So you're even getting some production that we weren't getting out of the fourth line before. Just my little complaint here.
Please
take a look at the Stars' fourth line. The numbers are always ridiculously low. Then you roll into Tampa, and you look over at the stat sheet. And Luke Glendening has 4 goals already this year. How in the world is this possible?
Including he tucked one on Dallas.
Yeah. What is it about our fourth line where offense goes to die? It's not like our fourth liners are worse offensive players, because we send our fourth liners elsewhere and they score.
You could get really bitter and point to the fact that Valeri Nichushkin is having himself a season for the Colorado Avalanche.
Well, he's having himself a career.
Who 25 points.
Yager said he was going to be the best player in the NHL at some point, right?
I mean, thanks to Pavelski and Robertson recently, we can finally say that Nichushkin would only be third on the Stars in scoring, not first.
Yeah, yeah. Dude. When he just scored 2 the other night, I think.
He'd be tied with Pavelski for the goal-scoring lead and 1 point behind Pavs and Robo for the overall point lead.
Which we all knew that's how that would work out.
Yeah, welp.
Anyways, cheer us up, Mark.
There's a game tonight, and then there's a game against St. Louis the next night, and we're going to St. Louis, so we can probably hear Kyrou booed by his own home fans because he apparently didn't say no comment at the appropriate time when asked about his previous head coach.
Which, insert rant here about, listen, man, I either want to hear less about how much we need hockey players to have personalities or less like haranguing of hockey players when they have personality. Like that, so what? Yeah. So the kid took a flamethrower to his coach. God, who cares?
Hey, it's St. Louis. If you're going to boo Binnington, okay?
Guy sucks. my two favorite teams in the NHL are the Dallas Stars and whoever is playing Jordan Binnington that night, playing against him, to be very clear.
Yeah, I mean, it's why I still follow Joel Esperance, because he has a unique ability to put Binnington off his game.
I feel like anybody could put Binnington. He's the rec league goalie that doesn't know that it's a rec league, and he's every time I just, that guy drives me crazy.
Yeah.
How are they going to do? The last time we predicted a game, they got their doors kicked in.
Well, you know, it's Ottawa and St. Louis, so you take a look. Ottawa can't play special teams, so that unfortunately we can edit this after the game, so we're going to get this prediction right. But I'm gonna guess they win that game, and then they're going to go to St. Louis, and this team just wins back to back. So I think they win Friday night and Saturday night.
I would hope so. I mean, this is a team that, if we're being, you know, super cynical, has two regulation wins in the month of December. They of course started the month with the 8-1 love fest against the Lightning, and then Detroit 6-3 last week. In between, they spent an entire week, they beat Washington, but it took a shootout, and they lost, you know, they lost Laffers to the Lightning and the Knights. The Florida game, the less I say about that, the better, just for my general mental health. Because this is a team that, you know, and they've got a little breather stretch, and you hate to say it because I'm going to, you know, you're putting all sorts of jinx into the world, but they've got Ottawa, St. Louis, Friday, Saturday. Then they've got Seattle, who are struggling on Monday. Then they've got Vancouver. And that's a tough bill these days, followed by, and no, they're not in the top three, but, you know, Nashville, a Central Division clash. And then they've got
We haven't seen Nashville yet this year.
No, and they've got this weird 3-day break before they'll close the month with Nashville, St. Louis, Chicago. Ooh. So if you're on the Dallas is a good team bandwagon, we should see an accumulation of points over the next, you know, 2.5 weeks.
Yeah. And you know, we always talk about regression to the mean, and it's always like good things are going to turn worse. And in this case, regression can also mean bad things can get better. And, yep. And I think we're on the upside there. And so, you know, next couple of weeks, let's get back into first place and have a good new year.
I mean, it's a doable stretch, right?
Absolutely.
If you're being a cynic, they've got one good team for the rest of the month. And it's the NHL, and every team is good and everything is close and nothing is easy, but they've got one tough matchup for the rest of the year, Mark. One tough matchup. So you have to hope that this team sees an opportunity to kind of make a statement and remind people of their bona fides. And, you know, back-to-backer here would be a good way to start doing that.
What are we going to get this team for Christmas? And we're going to get them an easy stretch.
And get them some wins, baby.
I like it.
All right.
Anything else?
That's all I got. Keep your eye on ice time and shooting percentage is sort of my mantra, but I think it'll be a good stretch. Mark, always a pleasure. KT, for putting it together in the background. And listeners, make sure you listen, make sure you download, make sure you like, give us the external input that tells us that we're good people and deserve good things, and keep enjoying your Dallas Stars hockey.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.